The Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, Mondays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? It's the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy, and how you can make the most of your own life, right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan, and welcome to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, December 13th, 2010. We have a big snowstorm coming in over the central New York area. I'm in Ithaca, New York, and I'm not able to be in my office and to use my usual Skype technology. I'm talking on a regular hard line today. I hope the sound quality is as good as ever. The show quality will be better than ever. We have a wonderful show for you today, an interesting show, a show that also has tragic aspects to it. The subject for today is going to be PTSD and the military. At least that's the starting point. Post-traumatic stress disorder in the military. Now, to start with, let me define my view of PTSD. PTSD is the reaction of a normal person with a normal brain having a normal response to unusual or extreme overwhelming stress. Normal person, normal brain, normal reaction. What's out of the normal is the horrendous stress of combat. And there are, of course, other stressors that can cause these problems in childhood. Sexual, physical, and emotional abuse. In adulthood, the witnessing and experiencing of violent events of one sort or another. I've had a long interest, as some of you know, and an increasing interest in our soldiers, our active duty soldiers, our retired military. In the last 2 years, I've had the honor of presenting at the nation's oldest stress conference, Military Stress, put on by Bart Billings, who's become a friend. Some of you know that I was in West Virginia, where I met today's guests last year to present again to military people, veterans, and also VA personnel. And on my website, we have the congressional hearings where I led off with testimony on why we shouldn't be giving drugs to our soldiers, why we shouldn't be treating PTSD with psychiatric drugs. Now, in many ways, the problem is not substantially different in the military than in civilian life. We have this problem throughout our culture and indeed throughout the Western world today. And the problem is biological psychiatry, its dominance of the delivery of services, and it is nowhere more dominant than in the military, where the psychiatrists at the top basically know nothing, practice nothing, but diagnosing and drugging. At some of the conferences I've been at, I've talked to military personnel who've told me that every soldier who comes from active duty to rehabilitation centers on the way home, who has a psychiatric diagnosis, everyone who has a psychiatric diagnosis is on multiple psychiatric drugs. Not one, not two, not three, but multiple psychiatric drugs. And I can tell you as a psychiatrist that no one gets better on multiple psychiatric drugs. All multiple psychiatric drugs do is produce multiple biochemical imbalances in the brain with results we can't anticipate other that they will not be good. Anyone on multiple psychoactive substances, including multiple psychiatric drugs, loses touch with their emotions, finds their emotions suppressed and out of whack, and sometimes erupting in unpredictable fashions, and finds their judgment impaired, including their judgment about their condition and about the effect of the drugs. I call that medication spellbinding. I've written about it extensively in my book, Medication Madness. No one does well on multiple psychiatric drugs, and most folks really don't do better on even one psychiatric drug. That's the half the problem. The other half is, because of the dominance of biological psychiatry, we have a lack of empathic alternatives. Alternatives based on really genuine caring about the individual, identifying with the individual, understanding the person, and providing them the emotional support, guidance, education, and help that they need. And a soldier who's been through trauma needs to be told not that they have a disorder, no, not at all that they have a disorder, but that they have a normal brain, a normal person, a normal response to horrendous stress, and that we're here to help them recover from the horrendous stress and their natural reactions to it. I think my guests will agree with that analysis. Today, my guests are Tom and Diane Vandenberghe. Vandenberghe is spelled V-A-N-D-E, then a new word, B-U-R-G-T. Tom is veteran of the military. He was in the West Virginia National Guard. I met him in West Virginia when, on June 6th, he made a phone call to a six-year-old daughter to wish her a happy birthday, and that probably, he believes, saved his life. His unit at that moment came under mortar fire, killing one soldier, wounding another, friends of his, of course, colleagues in combat. And he, in addition to that, had a great deal of experience with numerous rocket mortar attacks and running convoys throughout the country of Iraq. Tom was rotated home in, I guess it was March of 2005, and I'm going to let you tell him when I finally get to bringing him on the air what happened to him in terms of the military and the medications and how he got worse. Now, his wife, Diane Vandenberghe, she also served in the West Virginia National Guard, and she was an active-duty military spouse since 1986. She attended West Virginia University, studied criminal justice, and she's just a really terrific human being, like her husband, and she's been in the thick of what he's been through. They also have children serving in the military. Now, Tom and his wife, Diane, decided to set up something called, what they call, Lest We Forget. Lest We Forget. It's a PTSD support group. And they're going to start out, I think, by maybe, well, whatever they like, telling you about the support group, telling you about Tom's experiences, about Diane's reform work. And, by the way, they will be at our Empathic Therapy Conference presenting April 8th and 9th and 10th in 2011. You can find that at empathictherapy.org. Hello, Tom and Diane. You there?
Dr. Reagan, how you doing today?
I'm good. Is Diane with you?
She's actually in the next room over, but I can grab her anytime you need her to jump on.
Okay. Well, let's start. Tom, where would you like to start? You want to talk more about your experience, what you went through with the military, and then later we can talk some more with Diane about your organization?
That'll be fine. I mean, I'm not sure we want to start. I mean, what happened with our family's case was when we came back, when I came back from Iraq in 05, we didn't realize there was any problems. Okay, we didn't. It slowly, things built up, lack of sleep, anger problems, losing control, and we just thought, you know, our marriage was incompatible, and we're working through the premise that we were just having marital problems, and went to some counseling and found out that a lot of the symptoms I was exhibiting were PTSD. So we went to the VA from that point, and...
Was that a private counselor that you first went to, Tom?
Yes, it was a private marriage counselor. At first.
Okay. And they were good. They spotted this problem.
Correct. They realized it for what it was. It wasn't just people having marital problems. It was a lot of other issues being tossed into the pie. So we went to the VA, and actually I went by myself, and it was almost immediate. I mean, probably by the second appointment, within a month, I was already on five different medications.
Five within a month?
Oh, yeah. I believe it was started. I started out on four. And when I went back and I was having, you know, still having some problems getting sleep and things like that, they added another one in the pie. And
well, let's really emphasize this because it's really hard for people to grasp this. You go to your first visit to the VA, you've seen a counselor who says that your problems are PTSD, and that first visit, the VA psychiatrist puts you on four psychiatric meds.
Correct. I was put on an antidepressant. I was put on a... I was put on Seroquel, Klonopin, Wellbutrin, and Celexa.
Oh, wow. So you're on two antidepressants, a sedative to calm you down, and then you're also on Seroquel. I'll bet they didn't tell you that Seroquel was an antipsychotic drug.
No, I didn't know that until 3 years later.
And I bet they didn't tell you that Seroquel... you know, shortens your lifespan, causes diabetes, obesity, pancreatitis, high blood pressure, and all kinds of other problems.
No, they don't tell you those things. What they end up doing is giving you blood work every few months, and you start noticing that they're paying attention to your where your cholesterol level's at. You do start putting
weight.
Yeah,
that goes up, too.
I put on about 25 pounds. And you start having sleep problems. My wife thought I had sleep apnea because I would stop sleeping. I stopped breathing during my sleep. I'd be jerking around the bed. And, you know, those all created more problems. I mean, I was told I was on Wellbutrin for stopping smoking, but I was only smoking one cigarette a day. I was told Seroquel was a sleeping pill. I was never told it was antipsychotic, you know. I don't know how anybody's on some of these dosages I've been hearing about, 1,200, 1,600 milligrams a day, because 50 milligrams a day was enough to knock me out for hours. But it wasn't a good sleep or anything. It was just knocked out. It was like somebody put a black bag over your head and knocked you over the head with a bat. So the medicines themselves ended up causing more problems. I started not being able to get out of bed. I started having more anger issues. I started not having any memory of anything. It just started, every day was a new day, and I couldn't remember what I'd done the day before. And those really haven't gotten any better over time since I've been off those medications. You know, at first I thought they were getting better when they titrated me off, but actually they didn't titrate me off. They should have, but they didn't. But after they got me off the medications, my memory issues and headache issues and everything else just seemed to explode.
So you're still having the memory and the headache issues now?
Yes, sir. I've had
Do you still feel as caved in and knocked down as you did when you were on the meds?
When I was on those meds, I was really out of it, and now I don't feel as badly out of it. Now, I think part of the problem, sir, with the medications is not only are they not FDA approved for what the soldiers, the veterans, whatever, don't have any idea what they're on or why they're on them. They're given to them, and yeah, you get that little pamphlet that nobody ever reads, but you're not really told other than this is for sleeping, this is for this, and the opposite is the actual truth. You know, you're on Seroquel, which is an antipsychotic, but you're not psychotic, so why am I on this? Oh, well, you need to sleep. Well, did you even try an over-the-counter type of medication, or did you try a sleeping agent at all, Lunesta, Ambien? I was never given any of those medications. I wasn't even on the...
Well, and even short of that, there's lots of ways to help people who are having sleeping problems before you even get to the meds, but, of course, they're not going to take the time to do that in the VA. Do you remember, Tom, how much time you spent with that first VA psychiatrist who put you on the four meds on the first day?
Maybe an hour, maybe 2 hours at most.
All right, so he did spend a little, it wasn't 10 minutes anyway.
No, it was, excuse me, it was an intake. I mean, you know, it was
right.
As much information as you could give him, I guess.
And how about on the follow-ups, how much time did they spend with you?
They usually spend, when you get in to see the psychiatrist, which is about every 3 to 4 months.
3 to 4 months, okay.
Yeah. When you get in to see them, it's usually, you probably blocked in for an hour, 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay.
But it's not therapy.
Seeing the psychiatrist every 3 to 4 months. Now, did you try to tell the psychiatrist, hey, I'm getting worse, this is terrible?
Well, then they just up the dosages.
Yeah, right.
If you're telling them that you're not feeling any better off the medication, you're not sleeping better, or you're having problems with your sleeping, then they'll up the dosages.
Now, did you figure that out at the time, or is that in retrospect?
These are things I found out over years, you know, over the last couple of years. At the time, I thought, hey, you know, like all military people, a lot of military people, the doctors are officers or VA employees, and you're supposed to trust doctors. So therefore, you know, their goal is to not harm you, so they must be trying to help you. So if they tell you to take these pills, you say, yes, sir, 3 bags full, and go on down the line. And you don't question
it. Well, especially being a soldier, you do that. But,
correct.
You know, folks do that in ordinary life. I have in my practice highly trained specialists in medicine, physicians like myself, who got into this system and end up getting shock treatment, even though they're, you know, very knowledgeable people. Because when you go to the doc, you start believing them, and then once you get on the drugs, your own judgment becomes impaired.
Correct. Everything
more about what
really clouded.
All right, so pick up on the story now. You're on 5 psychiatric meds now, and then what happens?
I'm sorry, I've got bronchitis or something going on.
But, me too. We just cough away. Go ahead.
In 2008, my wife and I were back at each other's throats again, literally and physically. I ended up snapping. I strangled her. I ended up going on probation for, 50 weeks. I had to go to anger management classes through the courts. But at least the courts here, the judge here, was able to talk to my wife and ask her specifically at that time what she wanted. And she had already been doing research that I wasn't paying attention to at the time, but she had been doing research about all the medications I was on, and she demanded that the judge order me to get an outside evaluation away from the VA, to have my medications evaluated. She's the one who told them, don't put me in jail, but to put me in the anger management classes so I can start learning some coping skills, and said I'd get outside counseling away from the VA. So all those things.
What a miracle. You know, I didn't know this part of your story, and it so fits with everything I write about in Medication Madness, which is this downhill progression until the person does something that's wholly out of character for them. Had you ever done anything like this before, physically harmed your wife?
No. Well, before I went to Iraq, me and my wife, we had a great relationship. It was after I came home that, over time, the stressors and everything else just got worse and worse and worse. And when I was on all these medications, I just snapped. I mean, I quite honestly didn't even have a good recollection of the incident itself.
Yeah, that is typical of people who are spellbound by the psychiatric drugs and then just flip and do something that by their own standards are absolutely horrendous. And that, in my experience, with all the many cases I have, I got about 50 of them in Med Madness, in all of them, once they were off the meds, they never repeated violence or criminal behavior or suicidal behavior again. It's very drug-driven. Now, in the case of PTSD, you got 2 things driving the problem, both of which are like outside events that impinge on you. Here you are, you're a normal guy, a good guy, you got a good marriage, you got kids, you go off to combat, and then you get hit with PTSD, and then you get hit with the psychiatric drugs. So tell us some more about what went on.
Well,
we were at this part of the story, you went to anger management, your wife was standing by you and doing research. We're in 2008. What happens?
Well, in, near the end of 2008, the VA had gotten a new... I had gone to a civilian psychiatrist, okay, as ordered by the courts. And believe it or not, they had wanted to add another medication.
Yeah, of course.
Well,
see, it's the same in the civilian and the military. It's just the soldiers are more trapped and more trained to obey, but it's the same in the military and civilian, yeah?
But the one
thing... So he wanted to give you another drug, then what happened?
Well, then we found out, well, there was another thing they ordered, which was a good thing, but and I finally got the VA to approve it, was a sleep apnea test to find out why I was stopping breathing when I was sleeping and, you know, about the limb movements. So in December of 2008, I went to see a psychiatrist with the VA again because that was where I was getting all my medications from and everything else. So it's kind of a, you know, double-edged sword. You go to them because that's where your care is, but also that's where the medication is and how you can afford the medication you feel you need to be on. Because that's what everybody's always told you.
Yeah,
my wife,
I got you.
I'm sorry. But my wife went with me to that appointment. And there were several things about that appointment that was different. The doctor seemed to be, a decent guy. I mean, I slept through the majority of the appointment. The majority of the appointment I've heard about from my wife after the fact. But in my medical records, it says I was alert and very forthcoming or something crazy like that. So anyways... my wife questioned everything, and he was a new doctor. So the VA in Huntington and Charleston, West Virginia, they go through psychiatrists, especially in Charleston, West Virginia. They go through them like people change socks. Every few months is a new doctor. Now, they've got one now.
Well, the good ones leave,
is
my impression, Tom. The good ones can't stand it, and they leave.
Yeah, they get burnout real fast. And then they bring them in for the 3-month contracts because they've got to get somebody to fill that slot because they have such a high veterans quotient in this state. I mean, there are more veterans in West Virginia than there are in any other state per capita. So we went to the doctor, and Diane talks to him, and basically at the end of the conversation, in the whole appointment, he's going to leave me on the medications. Everything's going to continue on at least until the next time I see him. Not really sure why. I can't remember why he said he was going to do that, but basically I wasn't, Diane's questioning him, but I wasn't jumping out of a window at the moment, so let's just keep it going on and we'll talk about it 3 months from now. Well, and they did my blood work that day, and my blood work was out of control. And I went to see my primary care doctor 2 weeks later for a totally unrelated issue, which is my asthma, because I have real bad asthma, and I've got a problem with my shoulder and my ankle, things like that, non-psych stuff, and to talk to him about the sleep apnea test. Well, that doctor, I don't know why he ended up doing what he did, but probably because of the blood work, he had to have seen it, because there was red flags all over it. But basically, he stopped all my medication and sent me a new one, but he didn't tell me this, and it's not even in my medical records. So when Diane got the pills in the mail a week later, she calls me at work and says, well, why are you getting these new pills? I had no idea. So she called, and it was another antidepressant. It was a Prozac. And so she called the pharmacy, and they said, you can't mix all that medicine. It'll kill them. So then she called the clinic itself, and the clinic said, the doctor will call you back. We don't know. Well, it's not in his notes. We don't know what he did. So he calls back later on that afternoon and tells my wife, throw away all of his pills. That's why I'm saying they didn't titrate me off anything. She was told to throw away the Seroquel, the Wellbutrin, the Paxil, and just all that stuff. Just throw it all away, get rid of it, flush it down the toilet, and just put me on the Prozac. He didn't admit at the time, but he must have said, oh, my God, something's wrong here. I can't have him on all these pills. But just throw all that other stuff away. Don't worry about it. Well, a couple of days later, my head's splitting. I can't sleep. My issue's 100 times worse, and I actually got a call from the clinic director who said, so how you doing? And I said, well, I don't know. I'm really not doing very well at all. Oh, just let that other medicine kick in. You'll be okay.
Now, well, is this a private clinic now?
No, this is the CBOC. This is the
clinic. We're back to
the VA. The VA clinic.
Okay. Yeah.
So it didn't make any sense. So that's when Diane really started questioning everything and started really digging in and looking and saying, okay, there's problems around here. In West Virginia alone, at that same time, within a few months of each other, 5 different veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan died from this combination of medicine that everybody was being put on.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I know they love to say they want other medications. Well, we both know, at least I know, the military, if somebody was on, say, marijuana, or they were shooting heroin, and they did an autopsy, and they could clear themselves of any wrongdoing, but blame everything on the soldier who died, they would make sure that in their medical record it said, on heroin, on marijuana, you know, drunk out of their minds. But these guys, we've seen a couple of the autopsy reports, doesn't have any of that stuff. They were taking their medication as required by the VA, by the doctors. I mean, I know a guy whose mother was giving it to him per orders, by the way they were told to do it. And he still, at 22 years old, dropped dead in his sleep. And another soldier who I was in Iraq with him and his wife, 28 years old, the day he came home from the VA inpatient treatment facility, dropped dead in his sleep. Now, if you look at their records are going to tell you that, well, they were on other medications. I'm sorry. That's just hogwash. If they weren't anything other than what they were prescribed to be on, you would put that in that autopsy, and you would have it in red and bold and everything else. So basically, they're trying to blame the soldier, but in the reality is they can't, because they've actually given these people the pills that killed them. But nobody will touch this. Lawyers won't touch this, because who do you blame? Do you blame the Seroquel? Do you blame the Prozac? Do you blame the Paxil? Do you blame the Wellbutrin? Do you blame the Klonopin? I mean, what drug are you going to blame? And because nobody wants to take on everybody, nobody wants to take on anybody.
You should blame the polypharmacy administered by the Veterans Administration. That's what it is.
But if you file a claim with the IG, like I did, to say this doctor was completely out of line, and then I felt he was his mistake could have killed me, I was told...
Right.
That there's nothing to see here, moving on along. And when I filed a complaint with the state medical board for the same thing, I was told that it was the standard of care. So I called the guy up and pretty much went off on him and said, what standard of care? Would you allow your family to be treated this way? Just drugged up beyond compare? And then medicines switched out without any there's no notes in your medical record as to why these medicines were switched out the way they were? Everything's fine? That's great. That's why people are dropping dead. Not only are they being given medications that are not FDA approved for what they're being given for, they're in combinations that they're no way in God's green earth been approved for. But if there's any questions whatsoever about their treatment, well, the doctors are all covering for each other, and that's who's on the IG board, I'm sure, for the VA is a doctor, and for the medical board for the state. I know those are doctors because that's who signed the letter I got, and they're all covering for each other. It's the standard of care, and it's good to go. And if they're using these drugs off-label, don't worry about it. It's good to go.
I'm with you 100%. I think everything you're saying fits with my experience. We're listening to Dr. Peter Breggin. That's me, Peter Breggin, interviewing Tom Vandenberg, a veteran of Iraq, a man who was a Marine for 15 years and then was in the reserve and went to Iraq and who developed a PTSD after he got home, put on multiple psychiatric medications, 4 on the first visit, and he's taken our story up to the point at which his wife is really getting concerned and challenging what's going on, and the response, which is a kind of violent response I see a lot from psychiatrists, is to take him off all his meds. And in this case, to start him on a new one, Prozac. And you take somebody off 4, 5, or 6 psychiatric drugs, you just take them off, you're sending him to hell, to an emotional hell. And that's the point we were just at. And we could be going to a break, Tom, in about a minute or two. Do you want to just add anything quickly before we go to the break about what happened to you next? And then we'll pick up after the break for another half hour.
I just feel that what ended up happening with us as a family was when we were, educating ourselves, Diane's educating me, and we're really looking into these problems, we were cast adrift. You get blacklisted, you're on your own, and you can't not do what they tell you to do, because then they tell you you're non-compliant. That's just another edge of that sword they have, you know?
This is a description, Tom, that all of the listeners are going to be able to benefit from, because you're describing something that happens more intensely and frequently in the service and in the VA, but that in fact is endemic throughout the Western world now, and that is happening as well to children. I'm seeing children on 4 and 5 psychiatric drugs. I'm seeing young men and women now age 24 who've had 10 years from their teens of this kind of treatment. It's really a crime against humanity. It's there isn't language strong enough to condemn what you've been through and what your wife has been through and your family's been through and the implications for all of society as many veterans are being treated in this fashion.
Another major problem with this whole thing, too, though.
Yes.
A lot of people are wondering why these veterans are killing themselves. The stigma and the poor leadership that's being shown within the active duty today and the ways they're trying to save money over the long haul by underdiagnosing, misdiagnosing, and kicking people out for bogus discharges is why if they see Johnny being treated that way, they're not going to come forward. But they're having so many problems that eventually it collapses around them and they're killing themselves. Their leadership is not trained. It's trained for war, but it's not trained for peace. The junior leaders are being promoted so quickly that they don't know how to deal with their own soldiers except in a combat situation. And then when they come forward, they get totally off the side.
You're really summing this up beautifully. It's the best description we've had on this show yet of just how horrendous current psychiatric treatment can get. Now, I should be going to break, but I'm not hearing my break music. Katie, are you there? Here it comes. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'll introduce you again.
Oh.
This is Dr. Peter Bregan. I've been talking to Tom Vandenberg. He and his wife will be back after break.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Freedom News Hour will bring you up to date on the latest news on the financial meltdown.
Begin restoring local communities. It can happen.
We'll be exploring the issues from a freedom-oriented, small government perspective.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
I am Jake Towne.
Join us live Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Gary Knoll. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one forum that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join the founders of the Godspeed Institute for Spiritual Learning, Carol and Michael Hallenbeck, for Godspeed, an enlightening and informative journey into the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Through conversations with experts worldwide, this weekly live call-in program is an on-air classroom aimed at helping listeners gain exposure to and insight into religious and spiritual practices around the world, every Sunday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Mike Adams, the editor-in-chief and key writer of NaturalNews.com and co-founder of the nonprofit site ConsumerWellness.org. I'll be starting a special segment on the Progressive Radio Network called The Health Ranger with Mike Adams. I'll be interviewing everyone from Dr. Jane Goodall to Suzanne Summers. Find out the latest in natural healing news and easy ways to live a healthier and more holistic lifestyle. So tune in on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern every week on the Progressive Radio Network to hear The Health Ranger with Mike Adams.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Breggin, and you're listening to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour. And if you're just tuning in now, stay and listen to another great half hour, but be sure to go to the archive. The archive for the show will be up within about 24 hours. Go to the archive and listen to the beginning of this show. My guest for the first half of the show, and who will remain on and be joined by his wife, was Tom Vandenberg, a veteran who came back from Iraq, developed PTSD, and was given four psychiatric drugs on his first interview by a psychiatrist at the VA, and who, of course, got worse and worse on these drugs, eventually got violent toward his wife, completely out of character, but so, so common for in the general population, let alone in the military population, for people to have these bad reactions on the psychiatric drugs. And Tom has been eloquent in describing the situation of America's military, these sudden unexplained deaths, and something we haven't gotten into, but sudden unexplained suicides, which is the subject of my testimony before Congress that you can get on my website, Breggin.com. Just go to Breggin.com, Breggin.com, and you'll find my testimony to the Veterans Affairs Committee talking about these issues. Tom, I'm just grateful for the effort and energy you are putting into facing these issues and talking to us about them. You just really paint a picture that people throughout the world need to hear.
And I'll tell you, sir, my wife says 99% of everything that gets done.
Well, let's get her on the line then. Let's get Diane Vandenberg.
I've got her right here. Hold one second.
Diane.
Hello, this is Diane.
Hi, Diane. This is, guess who, Peter Breggin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, doctor?
Well, your husband and I have been coughing together throughout the show, but other than that, I'm doing very, very well.
Good.
And did you get to hear Tom's half hour?
Yeah, I listened to him.
I mean, the picture he paints of the effects on him of these drugs are a gift for people to be able to listen to, and they'll be able to listen to it indefinitely on the archives. Now, you and your husband founded Lest We Forget.
That's correct.
So I'd like two things from you. Any comments you want to make on your husband's story, and then to tell us about Lest We Forget.
Okay. Well, I do want to say that, you know, like my husband had said, you know, we had a fairly good marriage before we went to Iraq. Everybody has their ups and downs, but we've done really well. When he came back, that there was a big change in him and his symptoms from Iraq and PTSD from combat. And we thought it was the marriage, and, of course, we sought help. And I tried not to get involved because part of a military spouse is usually when the man's in the Army or the Marine Corps, whatever branch it is, the wife kind of lets the guy take care of his military stuff and we stay out of it. We take care of the kids or ourselves and things. And I think women have to be very proactive, though, when it comes to this and being an advocate for their spouse when it comes to their care, especially if they're coming back and they're different. That's the biggest sign right there. And being a part of that because it affects the whole family. And your kids, too, if you have children. It's not just his problem, it's everyone's. And so getting on the medicines, I, at first, just went along, and I noticed a lot of bad things as soon as he got on them. Problems with him. I couldn't awake him at night. If there had been a fire, he would have died. He was that drugged up. And problems with him driving. So my concerns with him forgetting things, it got worse and worse, and his behavior with the kids and myself was really out there at times. His thinking just was not coherent, I guess is the best way I could say it. Sometimes it wasn't logical, but he thought he was fine and everybody else had the problem.
Now, he'd never been incoherent before in his life, had he?
He'd never been like this before. I mean, he doesn't drink. He never did drugs or anything like that. So I'd never seen my husband acting in the ways that he was. The PTSD part is, you know, like the anger issues and that, they got worse on the meds. It was bad enough when he came back, but most of that I could understand. It was directed towards traffic or things like that. But everything got, when he got on the medications, pretty much immediately, even if you look at the medical records, I kind of looked them over at one time, I began calling right away with concerns about the medications, that I thought he was over-medicated. And, of course, I didn't have a release signed, and HIPAA laws prevented the ability of the VA medical to get good information from me, because he was going in saying he was fine, and I'm calling them saying he's not, and of course there's no release form for them to discuss his medical care with me, so that was
right.
A big problem.
This is a clear case of medication spellbinding. Your husband is deteriorating emotionally, his judgment is going, his cognition is going, his energy is falling. But he doesn't fully appreciate it by any means, even though it's clear to you.
He thought that he was fine. And like I said, everybody else had the problems. And I would agree with you 100%. He was like spellbound. He thought these medications were great. They were helping him when, in fact, they were making him worse, both physically and mentally.
Tell us some more about what happened after you took him off all the meds. And also how you came to develop your organization, lest we forget.
Well, that all kind of happened about at the same time. I think he had told you about the medication problem error that the VA did. And, of course, so he wasn't willingly taking off all those meds. I was told throw them in the toilet. And we had to deal with that. And at the same time, I began looking on the Internet to see if there was anyone else like myself dealing with this, and I happened to find Stan White, and whose son had died while on these medications here locally, and he had called me, and there was going to be a PTSD and TBI awareness thing within the community. Someone was having the Traumatic Brain Injury Association, so we agreed to go meet him that night. And at that time, there was a discussion about starting a support group. And that was something I really talked to my husband about when we left and said, I need this. Because all the support I had was very sporadic, and it was on the Internet. I couldn't find anybody locally. But I knew they were there. I just couldn't find them. And that's kind of what started it. We went home, and we felt that having other people like ourselves to talk to about the PTSD or TBI, the issues that come with this, with the military, was a better therapy in some ways than these drugs. And
oh, of course it was, yes. Because human beings need human beings. They don't need drugs. They need human beings to support them and help them understand and guide.
Right, and that was it, the support. We felt more supported, and we have in the last year, meeting so many different people that are not, we're not alone dealing with this. You know, the stories might be a little bit different. There might be different drugs. There might be different problems. But basically, it's the same thing. And being able to communicate to each other makes it so much easier. So
now, tell us now about your forming of your organization, what it is, how people can get in touch with you.
We started Lest We Forget, like I said, it's over a year ago in '09, dear? Yeah, '09. And we meet weekly at it's a building that we rent the space for. So we meet weekly every Thursday night at 520 Canal Boulevard. And that's where we put the word out through the internet at Lest We Forget, PTSDsupport.org. That's our website. And we get emails from other...
Slow down on that. Lest We Forget, PTSD...
Support.org.
.org. Lest We Forget, PTSDsupport.org.
Correct.
And this is very important because this is an example of self-help, and I believe it's ultimately going to have to come through self-help outside
Correct.
The medical arena that we get better alternatives to biological psychiatry. It's going to have to come outside the system.
I agree with you 100%. I think every state and every community that has even three or four people that can get together that have served in combat and are dealing with this, if they can get together on a weekly basis and have each other's phone numbers if they're having a problem and communicate, it really makes a difference. I mean, for us and our family, it has.
Now, do the soldiers, the former military, the vets who have the PTSD, do they participate actively in this along with the families?
Yes, we believe that this, like our support group, we really believe that it shouldn't just be the husband. If he's got a girlfriend, she needs to come. A mother, a father, sister, brother, the children. We have daycare that we provide. We try and do outings, go to baseball games, have email contact, telephone contact. And whatever we talk about within the group, we always say stays in the group. You know, and that's very important to have that. Because especially for the military, they want to have that security and trust. Trust is a big issue. So having that and being able to bring everyone that needs to come out and understand. You can go in a separate room. If the girls want to talk, we go in another room. If the guys just want to talk, they can go in another room. But being there at the same time means you're supporting each other.
It's a marvelous model. It's really... Now, how has the military reacted? Have they ignored you, fought you, helped you?
We've had mixed reviews. We've had some support. We were the Family Readiness Group at Fort Riley, Kansas, did make us a website of the month, put the information out there. And then we've also had mixed reviews. The VA has not seen us as a positive thing, and that might be because I've stepped on toes. We have stepped on toes because... We don't have to, how do you want to put it? I don't have a boss, and I don't have to be politically correct. And if you're doing something wrong, I can speak out, whereas I don't have a job to lose. And there's employees.
Well, you've spoken out very directly about the drug effects. And
oh, yes.
And actually, it was your intervention that had me invited to talk in West Virginia, right?
Yes, and I do appreciate that. That was probably the most enlightening. You are a big asset, especially in our community, because the education needs to get out there. This information needs to get out there. You don't have to be on 20 drugs. Some people are on 10 to 20 drugs for PTSD. To me, that's just ridiculous, and that's bad medicine.
You know, one aspect that I want to mention that's so important is the irony that all psychiatric drugs, virtually all of them, produce adverse effects that are indistinguishable from either traumatic brain injury, that is from having an explosive device blow up under your truck, mm-hmm. indistinguishable from TBI, traumatic brain injury, and indistinguishable from PTSD. Now, if you look at even the official FDA-approved label for all the new antidepressants, as well as the medication guide that's attached to all these labels now, you can find them in the physician's desk reference, you'll see warnings about insomnia, irritability, increased anger and hostility, a general worsening of the person's overall mental condition. All of this sounds just like this overstimulation that you get from PTSD and traumatic brain injury. So we're literally giving our soldiers drugs that mimic and worsen the
Yep.
symptoms that they're supposed to be addressing. That's how bizarre and outlandish and irrational the treatment of PTSD has become.
Yes, I agree with you. I mean, I know when my husband was on these medications, he was suicidal. And since he's been off that cocktail they had him on, he's not been suicidal. It's kind of, you know, same with physically, the medical part of it. He was showing signs of early kidney failure. Well, his cholesterol right now, his cholesterol is through the roof. 6 months after the doctors told us to throw that stuff away, his blood work and his cholesterol was better than it ever had been. He started taking fish oil. We were seeing outside the VA family doctor who had him on a healthy diet and vitamins and things, folic acid and stuff. He's much healthier now than he's ever been in the last 4 years.
That's marvelous. And he hasn't had a psychiatric drug in a long, long time, right?
Correct.
Well, that's just marvelous. What you're doing is really a model for what we need to be doing in our society in multiple different ways. The AA 12-step programs provide another model. The various self-help programs provide other models. And what you're doing is just an excellent one. Your emphasis is on family, on bringing in everybody who has any concern with the veteran, along with the veteran, bringing together veterans and families. I'm sure you provide education. You talk about stuff.
Correct.
You provide support. Do you provide a certain amount of education about the harmfulness of drugs and better alternatives?
Yeah, we always are looking for alternatives. In fact, we had a girl come in, a member of our group that's got some. It's actually a coffee, but it's not with the caffeine and stuff. So for the people that like coffee, it's got some natural herbs and things, and we're willing to try that. You know, of course, you should always check, you know, if you're on medications or something, you should check with your doctor before you take anything. But anything like that, acupuncture, give it a try. It's not going to hurt you. And, you know, a retreat, different things like that are really important. Massage
therapy. Do you do retreats?
We've gone on a retreat, and we are looking to hold a retreat or assist in holding a retreat with the organization that supports us come the spring, the Council of Churches, CareNet, and hopefully we can get a nice retreat going for our local veterans here.
You know, retreats, camps, natural kinds of settings are such an important way for people to bond, for people to heal, for people to strengthen. Do you agree with me in my analysis that PTSD is the response of a normal person with a normal brain and it's a natural response to overwhelming stress?
Oh, yes, 100%.
Good. I'm really glad to hear that. We have to destigmatize this area entirely. Psychiatry is always complaining about stigma, and then it stigmatizes people by telling them they have disorders.
Well, labeling it a mental illness.
I
think it's terrible, and that's another reason a lot of soldiers won't come forward. As soon as they think they're going to have a label that they're mentally ill, and we hear this, I'm not mentally ill. Well, no, you're not. But the only way the military will see you is they classify it as a mental illness. And to me, it's not. It's an injury. It's a wound. It's like a broken leg. You went to war. You got wounded. They should be treating it like you're mental. And that...
Yep.
That's where the stigma comes in.
We need to get out of that system entirely. Now, I know you work with churches and with the ministry. There's a very fine minister that you introduced me to down in West Virginia.
Yes, Reverend.
Yes, and I think that's incredibly important, to reach out to religious sources and religious institutions, and some of them are going to understand that drugs are not the answer. But not all of them, unfortunately.
Right.
But some will. Any other groups that you've been reaching out to and working with? How about professional groups? You reached out to me. Any other professionals supporting what you're doing?
Well, we've reached out to, we do have some members of the military that are, I won't state the names, but we've had some members of the military that have been supportive. And we've also reached out to some of the local hospitals. We do have some of the, like at the college, what are they do? The clinicians, the nurses that are in training, they will come out now and ask if they can come sit in. And it's really nice to have them sit in because then they understand, you know, how to deal with our veterans or our troops and the families. So we do encourage that when we have that opportunity.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, you're just, you two are a model for how to set up better approaches. They shouldn't even be called alternatives. This is the real thing. The real thing for helping people is to set up empathic groups, empathic therapies, where people really care about each other, support each other, understand what's happening with each other, and bring in multiple kinds of other sources to help them. I think it's just marvelous what you're doing. In the few minutes we have left, we've got about 5 minutes left. You or Tom have any thing you want to add as a summary or an invitation to other people to get in touch with you?
Well, anyone is welcome, again, to visit our website. We welcome any, you know, if there's somebody needing help in their active duty, that's what we do right now. We do a lot of advocacy. We do find that there's a lot of soldiers that are, that they actually do probably have PTSD, it sounds like. And of course, I'm not a doctor, but based on what, we, you know, the story we get and where they've been and how they were before they went to war, some of these people need some help maybe getting through the active duty system to get the right care. That's what we do. We fight very hard for that now, as well as a veteran. You know, if we can put you in the right contact with the right people, we will, or an organization in your area.
So people
that maybe
can call you from around, get in touch with you from around the country on your website?
Oh, yes, they can. Yes, we have our phone number and our direct email.
Why don't you give that on the air?
Sure. Our phone number is area code 304-437-5051, and then they can reach us by email at lestweforget@suddenlink.net.
Good. And Tom, do you have any? Is Tom on the phone as well, or is he?
Hold on, right here.
Yes, sir.
I love the way you say yes, sir. I think you're the only person that says that to me. How are you doing now, Tom? How does the future feel for you?
Well, I would have to say that I have to disagree with Diane on one thing. On the suicidal issue. Okay. The only way I can describe that whole thing is once you are truly suicidal, I mean, you've had the ideations and the whole nine yards, and with this PTSD, it's almost like a second partner. It's an out. It's my shadow. I don't know why it's there, but it is. It's a bad, very bad coping skill I've picked up over the last couple of years, but I don't know why it's just there, but
Like you're still struggling with that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When things start to, if for any reason things are going downhill around me, it's almost like my escape clause or an escape hatch.
Do you
still
get any counseling, Tom? Have you found anybody that's a useful counselor for you?
Yes, I've got a counselor, a local counselor here that I'm getting a lot of help from. He's a World War II veteran. He's with the Given Hour program, which is great. Given Hour is all across the country, as far as I know, where, you know, these psychiatrists and therapists, mostly therapists and counselors, are giving of their own time 1 hour a week to help out, you know, guys with PTSD or other issues, marriage problems and so on. There's no drugs. There's no charge. They, you know, their big thing with Given Hour is that they ask you to help give an hour back, and that's, we're definitely doing that with the support group. So,
Tom, you know, it can help a person to take, while you're doing your other good things, to take a very simple approach to something like this dark shadow that offers you a way out in your own mind at times when you're feeling desperate. And that is to decide that that dark shadow is not you, that dark shadow is imposed on you by horrendous events in the military that no human being is ever prepared to go through, then reinforced by the worst possible treatment interventions in these multiple psychiatric drugs. I would like to see you practice every time that shadow comes up, looking it in its eye and saying, get out of my life, you are not me. You've been imposed on me, you're not me. I'd love you to find your own words for that, because you may be surprised how much simple willpower, along with all the other things you're doing, simple willpower to confront that shadow, that part of you that got imposed on you, how well that can work. And then after you've said to that shadow, get out, then remember that you're a spiritual being, that you're a child of God, that you love your wife and your life loves you, and on the spot, substitute that sense of lovingness and beingness for the shadow. Would you try that?
Yes, sir, I will. I appreciate it.
God bless both of you. I love you both. You're both going to be at our conference on empathic therapy in April 8th, 9th, and 10th in Syracuse, New York. This is Dr. Peter Bregan thanking Tom and Diane Vanderburk for their courage, their bravery, their participation on this show.
You've been listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Bregan and his lifelong reform work on www.bregan.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.